What's up, everybody? My name is Tommy Ray, and this is the Attention Deficit Podcast. This is sort of our inaugural episode, first one. So I guess let's do some introductions. I guess I'll go first. Like I said, my name is... So my name is Tommy Ray. As of this point, I'm 20. I have two huge passions, wealth accumulation and acting. I've been in one short film, Daquan Cooper's The Monsters Among Us. So if anyone out there is trying to see some good stuff, please go check that out.
My name is Isaiah Franks. I'm 19 years old, college student, young DJ.
Hey, Rick.
And I'm just trying to make my mark on the world.
My name is Jaren. I am an aspiring AR person in the music industry. Currently at the moment, I am 20, living life. My two passions have to be music and Travis Scott.
And well-air-conditioned rooms.
My name's Austin Scott, I'm 21 years old. I'm a music producer and a DJ. Stage name, I go by King Scott. You don't have to call me King if you see me in person though, because that's kind of weird. But people do it anyway. That's it for introductions. I think we should probably get onto this first segment.
AKA, actually, I'm going to change my name on this podcast to 30 Ball.
30 Ball.
30 Ball. I like that.
Remember, you're going to have to look back at this in 5 years.
You say it fast. 30 Ball.
Dirty ball like her?
No, just 30 ball.
Ooh,
that's hard.
30 ball like Curry.
30 ball like Curry though?
No. 30 ball.
That's hard. Like Curry.
30 ball. That's hard as is by itself. You ever heard an ad lib before? 30 ball.
Like Curry. Like the husband of Aisha.
No.
Son of
Damn. Damn. Damn.
No. Son of Dell.
Yeah, I was going to say. Protector of Fidel name.
I should have said
Seed
of Dell.
It would have
been better.
Seed
of Dell.
Seed of
Dell.
Yeah,
I mean.
Process
it. Dell
2.0.
All I can say is... All I can say after day seems like I push against the...
Are we just going to sing and talk for this entire second?
Let's get a topic then, Playboy, since you feel so buff.
Yeah, awesome. Did you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I just did.
You definitely did.
As just in case to those who don't really know our story just yet, I AR for these two young gentlemen at the moment. Yeah, you might want to get it on the ground floor. Pretty soon we're going to be putting out some projects that I think whoever comes across this podcast should check out. It'll really change your look on music. And you better hop on this train soon because we're leaving the station. And that's not a joke. You feel me? what Offset say on stage? You did.
You did.
But I mean, probably the next half of this little thing we got here, we're gonna bust off into some topics, and y'all are gonna see what we're like as people and the opinions we have and why we have as a whole.
That was beautifully said.
I think it was also so well articulated.
You're so articulate.
Oh, no, it's not.
Well, you know, I learned vernacular in BMI.
Yo, alright. And with that, we
get out of here with all that trash. No, the vernacular lady, not BMI. BMI, go ahead. It's making black men across the world stand up.
Bring that up, stand up.
Speaking of BMI, make sure you have a performing rights organization.
Also, make sure you got two blocks.
BMI or ASCAP, one of them. Pick one.
30 ball.
To all you young cats out there, like making beats and just posting them on Twitter.
Stop playing with these niggas, man. Get your scroll.
Get your work registered so if you do get played on the radio, you can make a little bread off it.
Creative entrepreneurs, please charge for your work.
Please
co-sign that shit.
We're giving just great advice in this first segment. Just quick hits of great advice.
Off the top. But hey, guys, we are about to head into the red zone. No football. So we're going to wrap this thing up, and we are going to see y'all in a couple of seconds. Have a nice night.
All right.
Digital Cowboy.
So what y'all trying to get into? What y'all got on your hearts?
Let's talk about hair, like black hair.
Alright, whoa. Man. So there's coarse hair, there's not coarse hair, you have mixed hair.
Multicultural hair?
Yes, multicultural hair. There's all types of hair. But I can say for the style and the trend that is up to date, by the way, this is attention deficit. It's 30 ball. You feel me? So the style that's today is for coarse hair. That's why people that have dreads that don't have coarse hair, they look like Grinch fingers in the simplest terms. So coarse hair is the move, as is black culture, as is black people, as is gunning us down. But that's for another day, another dollar. But you know, it's just a thing. Just a quick segment before we get into the real topic. Sandra Bland didn't kill herself. And I really do think that the Thunder could do something.
The Thunder, unfortunately, have not played up to their potential.
They have all the past star games.
I've never seen a big three that played to their potential in their first season together, though. Like, ever.
It's going to take time. You're right. Never once has it worked.
I never judged until the second season.
That's smart.
Time for the all you're
and I should have learned, because I've obviously witnessed a few big threes, and
the only big three that didn't take time was Miami.
No, but they took a year. They
Miami
still lost.
Took a year. Yeah,
they still lost that first year.
You're right. I'm left, but I mean, it's true. It's very, very true. What do y'all think about Kanye West stealing the 90s or slightly 80s Nike shoe and making it his own with the new Yeezy that just came out?
Okay, so basically you're talking about how the Mud Rat, I think, the Mud Rat or the Desert Rat, whichever one.
It's called the Mud Rat.
No, but I think one of them is like a sandier color, and it's
the Mud Rat.
Okay, all right, whatever. The Mud Rat, it looks sort of like a sort of bulky mid-90s Nike basketball shoe.
For people listening, check this out. So, you have Michael Jackson. He's one whole person. There's nobody on this earth like him. You have a Michael Jackson impersonator. There's your example.
The Mud Rat looks like the old Nike like shoes for tennis. Like,
yeah.
They're bulky. The bulky and clubby style has been brought in by Balenciaga out of nowhere. I saw it coming because I'm headed.
But
the
it, no,
30
this,
ball don't play.
30 ball don't play about his fashion. But seriously, the bulky shoe trend has been a thing that's been a coming wave for a few years now, and we're just now starting to see it actually hit into mainstream brands.
Rocky. I think it was the revamp, like high fashion, like sweats.
Yeah,
high fashion sweats. That was the sign. That was the sign, because when people stopped wearing, you know, all the super fancy stuff, and all of a sudden now we're in baggy hoodies and really like thick sweatpants.
And the thing about that is that's all just a retelling of an old story.
The thing about that,
that's it's old sportswear. It's the way you used to wear like the gray sweatpants that had the cuff at the bottom, and then you would have some bulky Nike tennis shoes because that's what they wore to the gym, or that's what they wore to go work out or run. Or
I tie it back to here and today. I would say for the most part, everybody that's not us, waves being set by us secretly, nobody knows. We're like the Illuminati, you know.
I completely disagree that we are anything.
I don't
like
be anything like that.
I mean, as in the ways of like.
I'm not associated with.
I'm not associated with any
not
of that.
The Illuminati.
Evil nonsense.
We're like the rich dude. I got it.
I'm not the rich man.
Okay, we're good on time. I'll let you know. I got good eyes.
Yeah, it's good eyes.
My dad's an optician. I was 30 ball with the shit. But
30 ball got the
2020 vision.
2020
vision.
You feel me?
30 Curry vision.
Wouldn't that be bad? You know what I'm saying? Threw the ball, Baker Mayfield style. We back in the red zone, y'all. We're back
Heisman
in the red
winner.
Zone. So yeah, won the Heisman, by the way. It's my boy.
Shout out Baker, low key, man.
Shout out Bobby Evans, O lineman. You feel me?
Big up Norman.
Thank you.
cookies and cream. It's your boy Dirty Ball here. We're talking about interracial relationships today, y'all. So get ready. Let's dive into it. Off rip, I'm gonna let y'all ladies know.
For the record, all four of us are black men.
All four of us in this room are black men.
Mm-hmm. And for the record, ladies, if you're listening and my voice is soothing, grab the tissue. I got a girlfriend. I know. But she's Caucasian, so we're gonna talk about what it's like as a black man today in America with all the racial problems going around, what it's like dating her.
I gotta ask you, what was your first thought after you saw Get Out?
I thought it was a great movie. The thought that I would be in that situation didn't come into my head off the fact that with the first couple of days we started dating in 2015, I said that same movie concept to her as a joke. I was like, yeah, my first for real thought whenever I was going to meet her and her like family by myself. I've always had friends around me, I've always had people with me. I've never moved by myself. So when I moved out here, I was alone.
Yeah.
So I'm going to her house with myself. And the thought that like her parents would try to change me and get me to be a whitewashed black person did come across my head driving there. But it's like, apart from all the white people slander and stuff that's seen on social media, white people, my girlfriend and her family are completely separate being of that. You know, it's just like they're, whenever people are like, oh, not all white people are bad, as cliche as it is, like they're the white people that aren't bad, or else I wouldn't be with their daughter. Because I understand love, but I'm not the type to where if I know I'm not wanted by the mass, like I'm not finna, you know, let you have to be cut off and all this extra shit and whatnot.
Yeah, I feel you on that. Like I said, I can't necessarily to negate interracial relationships would be literally negating my inherent existence because I'm the product of an interracial relationship. And growing up in that, honestly, there were never any racial tensions at all. There was never any awkward moments. And it's interesting because my white grandparents are both conservative, but they had two daughters who both married black men and all had interracial kids.
I can say.
It was, yeah. But it's always been all love. There's never been a moment where I feel like there was a disconnect between me and them for whatever reason.
I can say, for me, or from where I grew up from, like I'm not off the streets. I grew up great, and so I like most of my friends were like black, like but like out of most of my friends, like when it came to the black population or where I'm from, that was it. So we had to stay true to who we were. We hang out with our cousins from wherever, but like also be able to adapt to hanging with the white people per se. So it's like I feel like I can sit down with all walks of life, because if you know how to maneuver with the white man, you know how to maneuver with all races, because although they're different, like that's the main one that controls the masses.
I feel you. That reminds me. I feel like definitely since we're on the topic of interracial relationships, it needs to be said, because you know, oftentimes if you check social media, there are a lot of black women that appear to have a problem with interracial relationships, but when you actually ask them about it, they say, we have no problems with dating people outside your race. We only have a problem when you use that other person of a different race as a crutch to belittle us.
Exactly, and for that, I would say, me personally, the way I maneuver, I show off what's important to me. So I show off my white girlfriend as I would my old black one, or the old Asian girl I used to talk to, or the old Indian girl I used to talk to. That aspect, I was never one of those black people, one of those black guys who was anti-black girl. So, but the only thing that I think I've ever really been anti in this moment would be anti-red zone, which we're back in, guys. So we will pick up this topic right after this. Stay wavy. Welcome back to
Attention Deficit.
Boom, 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 bam. You feel me? It's your boy Dirty Ball here. And today we're going to talk about how singing isn't as that's what they want you to do in the studio. And producer, friend, King Scott, here doesn't agree for some reason.
I think,
maybe one good singer nowadays that's popping, just like Uzi is. One.
Uzi is a good singer that's popping just like
can
Uzi.
No. When I say Uzi, singing, Uzi Chris can't. Brown Uzi. Actually singing. Singing, son. Not me. The Weeknd is the only one.
Drake?
Drake.
I said it, but in R&B. Who is putting off R&B?
R&B?
R&B. Drake?
Tory Lanez? No, we're not naming rappers. I'm talking about a full-time 100% SZA. R&B.
A full-time 100% R&B? SZA. Brent Faiyaz. Sondra Heard.
Again, I'm going to clarify. The only one that y'all said that holds weight is SZA. I'm
Bryson Tiller, a superstar
who is known in all 50 states.
You got Bryson Tiller
for R&B.
Bryson Tiller.
Bryson fell off; his album was trash.
But Bryson Tiller is still.
And he hasn't been. He doesn't do interviews. Nobody asks for this nigga. Nobody checks for this nigga.
This nigga's on tour. This nigga's going worldwide.
He's on tour.
James Blake. He's a superstar.
No, y'all could have said Daniel Caesar.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm talking about at the top of their game right now. Because, like, Trippie Redd.
Sabrina Claudio.
Trippie Redd can't really sing. He's popping right now. Trippie Redd can't really sing. He's
that's false. Right. Trippie Redd can hold a tune.
These guys can hold a tune, but I'm talking about a cappella. Like, they don't sound. Old school music, people wouldn't have said that they could sing.
Trippie Redd has like a whine in his voice, though. It's not about like your classic, like,
I know he has
basic rules of like. Of like seeing people need to get past these like barriers they put on people.
Oh no, I know that, but I'm saying that.
It's just making sure the sound's good.
I'll interject here. It's not that regular singing is not as valued, it's that heightened levels of production and vocal effects that you can add have kind of opened the floodgates to people who maybe can't sing as well.
I would say
so. It's not that the high performers, the super elite, aren't valued, it's that back then they were really the only ones that got the chance, but now you don't have to be able to sing like a Michael Jackson or a Prince to be able to get that opportunity.
That I agree with, and at the same time, I will still say that there isn't a huge presence coming from the R&B section like there used to be. Like back in the day, at least Trey Songz was holding it down. He disappeared. He dropped his album, and it didn't do anything. Bryson Tiller dropped his album, it didn't do anything. This is the only one representing. Fires out dropped. It only did small numbers of the people that fuck with Brent Fires. It's not on the mainstream.
What about Division?
Division
shit. It wasn't pushed by XO. Nobody knew it came out. Roy Woods is trash.
That's false.
Whoa. No, that's not DC certified.
First four songs.
That's not DC certified. That's not DC certified.
First.
Third that's not DC certified. We 100% support Roy Woods.
Yeah, Andrew, you just say Party Next Door.
We 100% support Roy Woods at all times.
Party Next Door is at the top.
Yeah, Party Next Door writes for everybody. What are you talking about?
He's popping.
I know. I'm not saying like songs.
Yes, Party Next Door wrote 80% of your favorite songs this year. And Murda Beats did the beat for it.
There's more people didn't say. There's hella people put on R&B. R&B is thriving just as much as trap music.
Yeah.
R&B is thriving.
Black people are murdering.
In a stink, got a tripe bite. Hey. Okay, that was a terrible argument. I'm gonna take that back. I'm gonna take that
hold that
all
up.
The way. I'm gonna tell you how far I'm gonna take it. From the 50, the 40, the 30, the 20, the 10, all the way to the red zone. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, and we will be right back after these messages. Ya bitch.
Let's see how we sound. You know, one thing I've kind of noticed is been pretty interesting is that there seems to be a pretty strong community of people who like to use anime or things related to Japanese animation in multiple facets of their life. And I've always thought it was very interesting how diverse it is, yet how undervalued it is. And I feel like a perfect example was with the recent work of Makoto Shinkai, Your Name. I think that is probably the best, definitely the best anime movie I've seen in recent years.
Well, could you say anime, going on a tangent here, could you say anime reaches out to the outcasts?
I think because it's so diverse, I think it's definitely possible, because the thing is, I'm not from Japan. So I've never lived in Japan for any stretch of time at all. So I don't know what the culture of anime is like where it was created.
For me, from where I'm from, I'm getting anime from the people that I know that were into it. And I'm not calling these people weird. I'm friends with all of them. They're great people. But I would say that the ones that I noticed were invested in the anime and liked it more than just watching it or just talking about it or seeing photos, that took time to really know it, were outcasts. And so to correlate that to another thing is whenever on the internet, social media, like Twitter, for instance, anime, sometimes like somebody will make a post and they'll be trending and it's an anime post or it's an anime clip or something like that, or they're making an anime joke and the mass media just happens to get it. You can say that in this generation, the most unsocial people are the like biggest on social media, because you don't have to be face to face with somebody. You can be
whoever you want.
I disagree that it's unsocial though. It's not unsocial. It's a different type of social. They're still reaching out. They're still making connections with actual people. In that, most cases, it's just not a face to face interaction. One of the disconnects we have when we talk about generations of things too. We want to say, oh, the technology age brought about all this sort of disconnection and loss of family values, but
I don't think it did anything with the loss of family values. I just think it fucked up a lot of unmentally stable people's communication process, because we could sit in a room, all three of us, and not talk. With no electronics and have a great time. You can drop me in a white room with like two other random people. I know how to communicate, spark conversation, and keep it light. Kids nowadays, I used to work where I would see them on a daily basis. These kids nowadays aren't as good as, they aren't as, I've met thousands of little famous YouTube and Instagram kids. They're weirdos in real life.
But I think that
any of you YouTube, Instagram famous kids, y'all are weirdos in real life. The musical kids, the little Vine kids, y'all are weird.
But I think we need to understand that it's not always like, oh, the generation is where that disconnect comes from, based on like a weird like technology revolution. It's because there's a lot of kids who grew up way back in the 90s who were also really shy or didn't know how to like socially interact with people, and they found different ways to cope with that. It's not that.
Yeah, most of them are very, very, very successful.
Most of the shy people who have ever lived on planet Earth are very, very successful.
I'm talking about, disagree with that. In the 90s, I'm talking about preferably the ones as in like business mogul. Anybody who was famous and they caught in the spotlight, that's a shy person. I'm gonna go off the brain and say about 45 to 50% of people that are famous are shy. Super successful, because every time you see somebody who's a star and they're out and about, are they smiling for the cameras? Are they looking right in? No.
A lot of them are
we're today.
In the red zone.
Yeah, we are definitely
we're in the red zone. We're in the super red zone. Lucky.
What's up, everybody? This is Tommy Ray from the Attention Deficit Podcast, and we were just having a pretty interesting conversation about how social media has not only changed the way people socialize and communicate with each other in general, but how it's affected in person, one-on-one, face-to-face interactions.
I definitely think there's a different level of interaction that
younger generations to face as far as face-to-face, because your friends don't have to, like, live on your block anymore, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have the ability to reach, really, most people on the planet, I'd say, through either telecommunications or through social media or whatever have you, but modern technology has allowed us to really, I'd say, be more social, if anything, because you can make the world smaller.
Dirty ball.
So, to that, I say, have you ever spoken to a girl and y'all like really had a thing and talked heavily over the phone, and then but y'all haven't met each other before, and then you saw her in person and y'all had that small awkward moment where you're just like and y'all were talking all this crap about like, yeah, I can't wait to hug you and be with you and hold your hand and give you a kiss and blah blah blah.
Yeah, not that specifically, but I've had something similar.
Okay, yeah. you get.
I agree with you, mean, and I would definitely say that's one aspect, especially when we talk about courtships with people who are trying to be in romantic relationships. That dynamic has changed a lot because a lot of people just feel like you slide in a DM. That's basically the way you try to approach
working in a place where kids where all walks of life. Child-wise come through, I've seen how today's kids interact, I've seen kids that know each other only associate with the kids that they know. Same race, doesn't matter, whatever. They only associate with the kids that they know. If one kid goes to the restroom, they all go to the restroom. It would take me picking one of them out with another kid in another group and like making them go against each other, or like, why don't y'all like talk for a second while I go help this person, or this, that, and third. They needed a push, but once they got that push, those problems were there. Like I mean, not problems, but those skills were there. They could talk to people. Yeah. Like, so it's just that it doesn't come as easy. You can drop us anywhere with, and if we have to talk to somebody, we'll do fine.
I would say this is what it is. I think the primary difference, at least to me in my experience, is that cultivating online friendships and sparking online conversations is so much easier, because I feel like in comparison to starting one-on-one personal communication or personal communications and conversations, is that it's more low stakes. Like, we all know that like only 10% of human communication is verbal. So if you're communicating with somebody online, unless it's like through Snapchat or something, then more than likely you're only gonna get a portion of what they're saying. But when you're in front of them in person, you have so much else you're dealing with. You're dealing with their energies, their body language, their tonality, their postures and all that. And I'm not saying that necessarily makes it more difficult, but the communication is more weighted that way.
Kids don't know how to talk to each other. They're weird.
I disagree. I think they definitely know how to talk to each other.
Different.
The social climate is different, and what they view as important is different. If you feel like you can just kick it with your set group of friends and you're fine with doing that and just vibing with your friends.
Y'all aren't. Let's talk. See what I'm talking about? They don't communicate. They're on their phones. That's
being on your phone is
communication. But that's still communication.
No, they won't. They will be not even talking to each other and be looking.
They don't have to be talking to each other. What if they don't like each other?
Then why are they butting near each other? That makes no sense. Why are they talking to each other?
You just said they weren't talking to each other.
Yeah.
He's saying, why are they together if they don't like each other?
Yeah. Makes no sense. It's like, why are we in the red zone? Bada boom, bada bing, and we're gonna hit y'all back in a couple of seconds. Hey, this is the
Attention Deficit Podcast.
Can never remember that. I can't. I have ADHD and I can't remember attention deficit.
I do not. And I'm so glad to be here, Mitchell.
It's Well, okay, so
it's cold as shit outside.
This is a cool thing. That was the most ADHD thing.
Let's just put that out.
Okay, this is a good time to go in. So since Austin doesn't have it, to give you what, let me tell you what it's like to have ADHD. So for me,
spider webbing.
Yeah, like monkey mind to the max. So it's like your brain, and you know, for me specifically, like this is the way it manifests in myself. Like it's like I have a bunch of brain processes, right? Like this brain process has to do with responding to people. This brain process has to do with like intaking information, right? So for me, it feels like it's all going a million miles a second. And so that's why a lot of times you'll hear my vocal patterns when I'm not paying attention to it. Like they speed up almost to the point of mumbling because my brain is going that fast. But the problem is it's not going that fast in one direction. It's going that fast about this thing, the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. That's probably where the real hyper part comes in.
95% of people in prison have either ADD or ADHD, but this is not an ADHD positive or
awareness
podcast. Just letting y'all know, fair warning, our ADHD niggas is supposed to be quick to the triggers.
Oh yeah, both of us just happened to have ADHD by chance.
Yeah, empty with the shit. So don't try ADHD niggas, take that to heart. And but I mean, yeah. Let them know.
Gotta let them know.
Let them know. So we're all sitting here looking nice, even though y'all can't see us. But one thing I can say is that fashion is becoming that of the middleman. And if you don't understand what I'm saying, you don't get fashion. Because pretty much what I'm saying is rich people are taking their inspiration from middle class people.
Every day.
Able to afford what they can. Because all these name brand things are literally just low level. Like the fact that this year they decided to make Champion a big brand. Do you know how long people have been wearing Champion and getting clowned for it?
Wow.
I used to have a Champion sweater my mom got me from Walmart for like $12. And niggas gave me hell for 2 weeks for wearing that. And now people are wearing Champion head to toe. Champion is nothing.
Now they pay $500 to get Champion.
The same sweater.
They got like really shiny Champion bubble jackets.
But you know what? I think it's not as much necessarily fat. Well, I feel like fashion in the sense, and I can't really, I don't know if how well I can expound on this, but I've always thought that fashion was just a means of using your clothes to capture a spectacle or to express yourself in whatever state of being you're being in. But I will say that style, because I definitely differentiate fashion from style. Style is something that's being more suited towards the middleman.
Yes, I would say I like to lean back on the crutch that I'm very versatile in my closet. And so that some people see that as like, you don't know how to be one thing. You're a jack of all trades and a master of none. But I look at it as, I have gone through many phases in my life, and I've peeked into many worlds, and I've mastered each and every outfit that I put on. There isn't a genre of clothes that I can't rock.
And I believe
keeping it
diverse is important to creating your own style. If you have a lot of influences, you can, especially if you intake more super creative, I guess, type of. If you're really into fashion, you'll study it. You'll care more about different types of fabrics, different types of cuts, different types of ways to wear things.
Different types of reds, like the red zone.
The red zone's a very bright red zone.
Very true. Very, very true. Very true. Odell Biz.
Third of all, so we're talking about elementary school memories. As a child, I had problems with math, and so I would go to a tutor. I don't remember her name, but if I had a police sketch, I could show you what she looked like. One day, she was teaching me math, and she had always been like slick mean to me. but I let it slide. And then one day I accidentally got unwashable Expo marker on her blouse.
Oh.
And she exploded with, "You idiot, you're so stupid. Like, this is unwashable." Like just going off. And so, like, little kids take things away. So, you know, I was quiet, frozen in fear. Well, went home, and then I told my mom. And for those of you that can't, you know, don't know, I'm African American, I'm black. So my mom went to that school and raised hell. And it pretty much came down to that lady either being fired or my mom was going to sue that elementary school. I hadn't seen that lady since, but that was my first encounter with, that was my first, like, how not to let somebody treat me. You know what I'm saying? Like, as much parenting as I had from my mother, that was my first instance where I was like, okay, like, later in life, if anybody was ever coming at me and, like, calling me stupid, it was like, bet, we're on attack. We're not letting you get taken advantage of like that lady took advantage of you.
You know, that resonated with me, because I feel like I've always had this feeling that a lot of people, like, first of all, I feel like we need to start recognizing educators as authority figures. Maybe not, like, recognize them as they are supposed to be people with authority, but we need to recognize that they are people with authority. Their students view them as someone with authority, as someone who holds power over them, because they are holding, you know, their education is in their hands, their, you know, behavior is in their hands, and such. And the problem is, I feel like certain people are not suited to have authorities. Like, the fact that she would blow up on you like that and sit there calling you an idiot because of some mistake you made.
She shouldn't be working with children.
She shouldn't be working with children. She shouldn't be someone in charge with raising this nation's future. Like, that's unacceptable.
My second instance would be after that happened. I had a second grade teacher named Miss Rogers, and she used to always flip my car to yellow, and I would go home and I'd get whoopings. One day, as a little kid, like, looking back, it was funny. I went up to her and I was like, "Miss Rogers, can we make a deal?" I was like, "I don't mean to, like, get in trouble like I do in your class." And I was like, "And I just want you to know that whenever I have to change my car," I was like, "I go home and I get whooped." And the look in her eye was just kind of like, okay, bet, it's deserving. Like, get out of my face, go sit in your chair. And so, like, the look she gave me confused me as a kid, because I'm like, okay, like, my mama told me to talk to people as adult as I can. Like, I told her what happens if I get in trouble. So I'm standing there, like, calculating this as, like, an 8-year-old. And I hear that line that made my heart drop. Go change your car to yellow. You didn't sit. You shouldn't be out of your chair. So I changed my car to yellow, went home, got a whooping. The next day was a parent-teacher conference. To my father, all she did was talk cash shit on me. Like, if the FBI was in that room asking for, you know, who shot Kennedy, oh, Jaron was the one in the book room in the whatever down in Dallas. Like, it was like that. And you know how moms are, so my mom was buying all of it. So my mom comes home hot at me, and my dad was like, "No, like, fuck that lady. Like, she's on that BS." And so that was the second instance, but really she didn't like me because I went back to that first instance and I was like, "I'm not gonna let you haunt me." Like, me and her really hated each other. Like, I used to, like, say out loud, like, "You fall down some stairs, I'm happy with it. Bet. Cool." It's terrible.
That's what's up, man.
We got, like, you know, we got, like, basically 15 seconds left. So what we should do is we're about to pick this up on the second part. I think this is a good time to go in some of our experiences as in the educational system, and whether it be good or bad. I think this is a good time to kind of.
We in the red zone, so I'm gonna turn up one time. It's 30 ball. Fuck Miss Rogers. You feel me? Shout out Miss Super.
Jaron, yeah, man, that story sticks with me because I remember the first time
dirty
I
ever dirty ball in the building.
The first time I ever experienced something like that in elementary school was in fourth grade. Well, technically it was in the third grade, but it was different. This one was more similar to yours because it had to do with the teacher that I was directly dealing with. So late elementary school and early middle school was like the peak of like my ADHD. Like, you know how ADHD will, like, usually when you're younger, it like it peaks and then you either learn to deal with it or it, for some people, it even goes away as they get older.
For me, it took channeling mine into sports, but continue.
Yeah, exactly. So that was like the peak of mine. Like, it was so bad. Like, I was constantly getting in trouble because I couldn't sit down. Like, yes. I was standing up doing something at all time.
I'm standing up right now, y'all.
Literally, the both of us are sitting down, me and Tommy, and young 30 ball over here standing up.
So
right at attention.
And like I said, like, I didn't know how to channel it or anything. So if the feeling came, like, it was so bad, like, I used to have like these weird like spasms where I would get so hyper, I would just like just start like just manically just shaking for like 2 seconds, just like hype as fuck for no reason. And so also, like, I've heard that I had a pretty gifted mind, but I didn't really know how to articulate that, so I just would say all them types of thoughts that would come into my head and they would cause trouble because then I'm talking all the time.
That leads back to that awesomeness that each person has.
And so then one day a good friend of mine named Giovante, who we've been friends with ever since I met him in like the second or third grade.
Shout out Giovante.
Yeah, we had a class in fourth grade, and our teacher's name was Miss May, and Giovante every once in a while would stay in during recess and work on some, I think we had kind of like a tutor type thing in the library, so sometimes he would go in, you know, work on some stuff. So he was in the library studying one day.
Did you put
the dude on blast? No, it was like a thing that everybody did.
Oh.
Yeah, it was more of a like whenever, like, we all did it in rotation, and he just, I forgot what his day was, but we would all go in and like do a study thing instead of going outside.
Okay.
And so he was there, and apparently our teacher was setting up for a substitute, and she was by him, but I guess she didn't notice him. So he's sitting there studying, and then she says my name, and she's like, because the sub was like, is there anybody I should worry about? And I don't remember this, and I only remember this because Giovante told me, like, and she was, so the sub had asked, is there anyone I need to pay special attention to? She said, not really, but you should watch out for this kid named Tommy. And the sub, who was a woman, was like, how would I know who Tommy is? And she was like, it's easy, he's gonna be the annoying black one.
Yeah.
And maybe that incident got out, because I never told anybody, but maybe someone else did, because she definitely like left our school after that year. She like moved somewhere else. But yeah, I remember that was the first time where I was like, where I felt like kind of upset, because like I wasn't doing anything within my control. Like, I hadn't started taking medication for it yet, so I didn't know how to handle like all these thoughts and like these urges that were going through my body, because I'm hyper, so I can't sit down and I can't stop moving, stop talking. So yeah,
I don't even know if you've ever told me that story before.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't think about it a lot. And I remember because, like I said, Giovante told me about that one. So that was like, I didn't know what happened until like 7th or 8th grade when he told me.
Wow.
Yeah. I guess he like just assumed I knew. But yeah, like,
recently enough.
Yeah.
The next, can you go ahead and stop. How you doing?
What's up?
It's your boy. Thought about, and I'm here with King Scott, producer. Not of this, but he's a producer, and I'm here with my business
partner. I'd give him a producer credit.
I would love to say I have a producer credit for this.
Executive or just a producer credit?
At least a producer, if not executive. Digital Cowboys, come on now.
I call director.
I mean, let's not get into all that. Let's actually talk about something.
Alright, let's not just sit here. No, we're gonna keep this going. It's freestyle, baby. It's wild, man. So, today, right now.
We were just talking about sports. Why not keep it on the topic?
Let's talk about how
everything in sports today is moved with a subtweet in real life, you know what I mean? When Kyrie left the Cavs, they had that huge storm over why he left. Anybody with a brain and who knows how a true black man moves down to his roots knows. Kyrie left because he was tired of being under LeBron's ball sack. He wanted his own team where he could drop 30 a night and show his ass. He knew he couldn't do that with LeBron. Because not that LeBron has to have the ball, but LeBron's going to give you the ball whenever he feels like you need it. You know what I'm saying?
LeBron definitely has to have the ball, and I think as a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, it's my duty to speak up on this and speak up on how this turmoil seemed to just cause such a ruckus throughout the entire offseason. First of all, I don't even think it was that big of a deal that Kyrie left personally to me. Like, I love Kyrie. I've always been a fan of Kyrie since he's been in the league. I follow Kyrie's career, but I'm happy with whatever business decision he decides to make at the end of the day because it is a business.
Thank you. That's why I didn't understand the KD hate. Like, the state of Oklahoma, I stay here. I'm with y'all. I understand, but I'm from Texas. And I've played basketball at a high level. It's a business. Kevin Durant was not born here. I don't care who he met here. Him and Westbrook weren't close like that. The whole cupcake thing is ridiculous and unnecessary.
I do think if you have any sort of like team loyalty, if that means anything to you, I get why you would not be messing with Kevin Durant. And I'm not gonna act like your frustration is invalid. But at the same time, you have to take into consideration, like, if you had the opportunity to not only be one of the greatest basketball players we have today, but have the opportunity to go make a lot of money and play on the best offensive team we may have ever seen.
In the regular season?
In the regular season, that's just a fact. Those are the numbers.
See, but it's like, it's just like saying, seeing a guy who broke up with a really, really attractive female and asking, like, dang, bro, like, she had it all, like, she's fine, she, like, she don't seem crazy, why'd y'all break up? Whenever you're not happy, it doesn't matter what circumstance.
Exactly.
It is, you're going to want to get out. Maybe KD just really didn't, as much as, no Oklahoma wants to hear that, and part of my heart that's from this state, it hurts when I say this too, maybe KD just doesn't want to live here, just didn't want to be here anymore. He felt like it was a chapter in his life that needed to be closed and that he didn't have to stay no matter how much money y'all were giving him. Yes. He wanted a new outlook.
And there's nothing wrong with that. As a man, you should be able to, especially with that type of power and influence, you should be able to choose like where you work and how you operate your career. I think any person should have the freedom to choose to live their life the way they want. I'm going to fight for that right as much as I fight for anything.
I mean, because for me, when Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City, he was at the point in his career where he was already Hall of Fame. That's easy. He was already Hall of Fame, but he needed that ring. And so, of course, in his mind, the only thing he was thinking about is what can I do to get that ring? Even if that means going to the team that just came back and kicked your ass. Like,
and to be honest, like, that right there is the only thing for me personally that makes that like really, really, like, I don't know if that was the best.
I don't know if I would do it.
Yeah, I would say for me personally,
but I'm not tearing his poster off my
I'm not tearing him up, but I think it does have a little bit to say about like what you value. At least I'm not gonna say you have bad morals because you don't want to be loyal.
I don't know if Des caught it in the red zone, but we just did.
No, it was a catch.
So, yeah, no, for sure it was
a catch. But I just want everyone to know it was a catch. I'm not a Dallas Cowboys fan. I actually don't.
Spread it up. Mosh pit. Third of all, this is
Attention Deficit Podcast.
Attention Deficit. And, you know. We here again, banging out these episodes for y'all. This is all love.
The wee hours of the morning.
Wee hours, no Irish.
It's only 6:12.
We got 6:12. I'm about 6:12. You know where that song? That's a Dallas thing. It's an old.
I've actually heard this song.
I know. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I got 6:12. I'm 6:12.
I've heard.
But, yeah, so let's talk about how the
voice of the people at the moment to the masses, from the masses. DJ Academics is hated by that same masses. Cause I feel I'm the only person I know who likes him. I like his personality. Okay. I think he's funny. I could kick it with him.
This is an interesting topic, and I'm glad you brought this up. Okay, so I'm not really a DJ Academics fan, but I'm not here to like be like, oh, pro DJ Academics or con DJ Academics. The question is about how come DJ Academics is essentially a voice of the people in a lot of youth culture right now.
This is going to be great. I know nothing about DJ Academics besides people dragging him on Twitter. That's like my entire
At the moment, he's the Crypt Keeper. He is your gateway to success.
Or the Gate Keeper, I guess.
Isn't
the Crypt Keeper like a horror movie or something?
Yeah, I just went with the Crypt because it's darker, because he does have a darker undertone.
Oh, well, yeah, he does, low-key, because he'd be doing, yeah.
Because I only know Academics. I've followed Academics for years. I saw all the slander. I never took part in it. Never had an opinion on it. And then I got to see him as a person on Everyday Struggle. And I can say that I like him as a person, but in all reality, though, the only reason I watch Everyday Struggle is for Joe Budden, because I love watching Joe Budden's podcast. Like, if Everyday Struggle fell apart, but he kept doing his podcast, I'd be okay.
Yeah.
Because that podcast group is like really just him and his niggas, and it's way better than Everyday Struggle.
I like the Joe Budden. It's a lot more interesting. They actually do
shit he wants to talk about.
So stuff he wants talks. To talk about, and they like go into like sleeper picks. So like, each of the guests in the podcast like plays a song that they think is kind of slept on that's like currently out right now, and it's like always some real fire. Like Joe's been on Sabrina Claudio for like a minute,
and
like a minute. Joe's with his stuff.
You were talking about sleepers. We were talking about sleepers. Sabrina Claudio. I'm trying to remember what I was about to say. Joe Budden.
His podcast.
We were about to go in on how DJ Academics, you were talking about DJ Academics at first.
Yeah.
Joe, being in the game for so long as he has been, one thing he does on his podcast I've noticed, which is a flex, but he's really just being himself and he wants answers. He calls up the people that these wild ass allegations and stories and just crazy shit that had, like, instead of it just him speculating and it sounding cool and then him having to apologize to that person, which he does on Everyday Struggle.
Yeah.
He like the shit, like whenever he was like a couple days ago, he's talking about Mace. And he's like, what the fuck was Mace going through wearing that shit at the interview with the shit on? And he's like, we calling Mace up. Rory called Mace, and they called Mace, and he was like, Mace, what the fuck did you have on? And like, Mace was just, man, you know what I'm saying? It was just trying to be seen, whatnot, and whoop-de-whoop. And then like, I saw like four more episodes where this nigga kept calling up people, like just pressing them, like, hey, this is Joe Budden here. You're on my podcast right now. I want to know what the fuck was going on with all these allegations, man. And the dude gets to explaining himself, and I was just like, that right there makes that the ultimate podcast, because
the production value, bro.
One, you have a view.
That's so thought out.
Exactly. And it's really just this. They're just in a studio.
So thorough. Sure. We're quite early in the podcast game, but it's like weird to be comparing yourself. Such a legend. But Joe Budden's just a legend, period. I mess with Joe Budden. He's a really smart guy. He has
because it clicked, because I used to think I watched Everyday Struggle just for Academics, because I was like, that nigga's so cool and so funny. But like, it came.
So this is the last segment of our inaugural podcast.
What can I say, man? It's just been a really thorough experience. Thorough in time and in effort and...
It's different.
It's really
different. But it's also weirdly natural.
Yeah, because this is actually how we communicate.
Yeah, that's true.
This is just how we talk.
This is just our conversations recorded. There it is.
Which that aspect of it does throw in a different variable, but...
Quick question.
Yeah.
What kind of mindset or things do you think You ever think about the crazy person? The type of crazy the person has to be to run one of those like fake accounts, like how Drake has an actual Twitter account and somebody else would be like at Drake with two E's in between. Bullshit, like, when your heart doesn't match what your head wants or something like, do you know what
I think? I think
those are like,
those fake accounts just show how far people are willing to go to get attention by like any means. That's exactly. It's like, because for me, like, I don't. Honestly, I doubt that anybody who has those. Well, I would hope anybody who has those accounts doesn't take it like super seriously. Like, I would feel like that was like a they were drunk or they were high and they were like, you know what, I'll make a parody account, and then they just did it, and then it might have blown up. I would hope people don't think like I want. Like, I think that's weird to make an account on the grounds that you hope people mistake you. Like, your goal is for people to mistake you for the other person.
I don't think a lot of times that is even the goal. I think those types of pages are basically there to just like feed you little cheesy like poetry type stuff or weird pseudo relationship advice that isn't really specific, but it's just like moody enough to get you to feel a way about it. And then, but it's like all the same, like on all of these little celebrity parody pages, they all have the same little quotes. So I think it's just like a Twitter thing, like they just have people who run those types of accounts. And they probably get paid for it because they get like thousands of followers and stuff. So they probably have some way to monetize their audience and their social impact.
Yeah. For me, like, it's weird though, because I have to take Twitter in doses. Like, I can't be on Twitter for very much time at all, because every time you hit Twitter, you're hitting like an aggressive force of dogmatism that is like almost unparalleled in any other space. Like, the fact that every time it seems like, and I'm exaggerating here, but the fact that it seems like that people celebrate when someone actually compromises on their idea. Like, you know what? I put this out here and I had this thought, I had this opinion, and you differed from me. And you know what? I value that, and you changed my mind. You shifted my paradigm, you shifted my perspective, and I respect you. The fact that it's almost like it's an uncommon practice to the point to where people are like, look at Twitter doing its thing, look at people compromising, is like weird. Like, because now the norm is, I'm 100% right, there's nothing else. Like, I'm right, and the only, like, I'm right and you're all dumb, or I'm right and there's no room for argument at all. And I think that's ridiculous and an unhealthy thing to be involved in on a regular basis.
I agree as well. And I think a lot of that has to do with our...
Sorry.
Were you able to cut in? Oh, sorry. You did cut in. but I think that has to do with sort of our generational understanding of, like, the internet. The internet can sometimes be a foul place.
Yeah. A very rancid place.
Wow. One might say a stinky place.
Oh, word. Man, okay, so if I was like...
an odious giraffe, place.
If I was a giraffe...
We're in a red zone, so... I guess that does it for the first one.